Yeah, we need to call him to get him as a guest on our show here.
I don't know those kind of people.
I called Brian to be in here today. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, I got so much to do, but next week I guarantee you I'll be here.
So if we can't even get Brian Metz in here, how the crap are we going to get Mark Cuban?
Yeah.
I think
Stanley wants to be on again. He wants, and also
awesome.
John Hotchner wants to be on also, but he said he couldn't be on this time because he's busy. He wants to be on soon, though.
Oh, okay.
The bleeping.
Which I didn't say the words so you could bleep them later. I just didn't say them.
Yep.
Well, since we're all here, why don't we do a podcast?
Well, if Scott gets his microphone closer.
Do I have to?
Yes.
Eventually.
It'd be nice.
Count it down?
How's that?
Much better.
Scott, are you good to go?
We should have guest counterdowners.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm James Wygant, Associate Editor of the American Stamp Dealer and Collector, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, podcast number 27. I'm sitting here with Scott, Kaj, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking at Stamp News. A USPS postal worker goes, well, postal in D.C. Hashtag Stamp Stories. Hashtag The Pony Express. What did you learn in school? And our expert topic of the week is in honor of the 155th anniversary of The Pony Express. And all about its short run of stamps and cancels. So Stamp News, CNN reports that a 61-year-old USPS worker by the name of Doug Hughes from Florida was arrested by Capitol Police in D.C. after flying a man-made human-carrying gyrocopter onto Capitol grounds on April 15.
Oh, boy.
That had a post office logo on the back.
I think it's on the west lawn of the White House is where he landed.
Yeah. It wasn't the White House, because then he wouldn't have made it.
The snipers that live on the roof would have had something to say about that.
He told everyone he was doing it. They did a little interview with him with his local news, and he even had a blog saying, I'm going to do this.
Somebody even called the Secret Service and told them he was going to do it.
The Secret Service interviewed him and said,
They interviewed him 2 years ago about it, and then a reporter from Florida, where he's from, called them the day he did it before he did it and said, somebody's going to do this.
Yeah, they,
I guess they're too busy to listen to so much random chatter.
Well, not even the Secret Service takes a post office seriously.
Well, a lot of people, you get this information and it's like, well, what do we do with it? We don't know whether he's actually going to do it or not. And
except that he told them when and where he was going to do it.
There's a zillion stories in history, including Pearl Harbor, where the guy said, hey, I see a whole bunch of airplanes coming. And the guy going, nah, it's probably bombers coming in from a test flight.
That's true. Nobody wants to believe bad stuff is happening until it happens.
It wasn't bad. He claimed to be unarmed.
Pearl Harbor was bad.
Well, he was unarmed. Except unless you consider 435 letters for one for each member of Congress being armed.
I think you left out the Senate. 535 letters.
Yeah, he said 535. Yep. And you know what? He was a good postal worker. He put stamps on every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So I wonder.
And now they're going to be evidence, and they're going to sit in some trial somewhere. Yeah, it would be pretty cool to have it.
Yeah, but none of the stamps are canceled.
Yeah,
how do you care?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
They might feel obligated to mail them because it was an attempt at mail delivery.
It was by a United States postal worker.
Well, if they were cut from imperf press sheets, they had no chance of getting through.
That's great.
No, I really, you know, I I understand it was a great protest. He was on TV, or his gyrocopter was on TV. He was obviously hauled off somewhere, but it was on for CNN for hours. I mean,
oh yeah. When I first saw it, I read the article and I thought, oh, okay, yeah, one of those little remote controlled drone things. Then I watched the video and went, he flew that himself. Mm-hmm. It was a real helicopter.
The back rudder had the colors and everything of the U.S. Post Office on it. It was a U.S. Post Office, let's call it unofficial carrier gyrocopter. Vehicle, yeah, there you go.
Yep, at the, there's a...
So I wonder if he cached his covers with the gyrocopter.
Oh, that would be cool.
You can see the USPS logo clearly at the 1 minute and 46 second mark. And the 1 minute and 31 second mark on the CNN video.
I was staring at CNN for like the whole 2 hours. It was staring at it. Yeah, you could very easily see it. But yeah, it was kind of cute.
He had one of the little post office bins.
Oh, yeah.
Did he put all the letters in?
But wouldn't it be cool if he did cache them or something? That would be neat.
Oh, my gosh. That would be, seeing it, they're evidence. How do you get something out of evidence at that point?
You got to wait, unfortunately.
Yeah, he said he planned this for 2 years, so he didn't plan a cache in that time. So, oh, well. If you want to see the video yourself, you can go to CNN.com and look up aircraft lands on Capitol grounds. And it happened on April 15th of this year, so check that out.
When I first told Jessica, she's like, are you kidding me? Is that an April Fool's joke?
Yeah, because it's April. I'm like, that was just being
days
really
late.
Old from the first.
That's the best joke. Exactly. That's the best joke is the late one that nobody expects.
Like the spaghetti tree.
The
You heard that one. That was like one of the first when TV first started. BBC did a... April Fool's joke.
Okay.
And they had spaghetti growing on trees, and they were talking about how the spaghetti weevil is cutting down on the harvest and spaghetti prices are going to rise and stuff like that. And people believed it. They're calling it going, how do I get a spaghetti tree? I'd really like to grow a spaghetti tree.
Oh my
it
gosh.
Was great.
Those special people out there.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
But it was good.
Any of them Italian?
They were the only ones that knew better, probably.
Yeah, really. No, you can pull it up on YouTube and everything. April Fool's Spaghetti. And I'm sure it'll pop up as the number one search. Yeah, very, very famous April Fool's joke.
That's awesome.
Okay, let's move on to stamp stories. So since we're doing the Pony Express, we're going to cover how did you first hear about the Pony Express? Was it in school? Was it at a museum? You know, was it in a book?
Well, maybe I was rocking in my rocking chair on the porch, and the guy rode past me. And I said, what the heck are you doing? He goes, I'm delivering the mail to Missouri. And whew, he was gone.
Yeah. Well, Jessica and I thought about that as a stamp story because we remember when we were in school, it's something that's been kind of marginalized a little bit. And we got maybe like a paragraph blip in a history book. We knew that it existed and it had something to do with Wells Fargo.
And there were horses involved.
Yes.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yes.
Well, my grandfather used to watch old Westerns, so I suppose that's probably where I was first exposed to the learning about it.
Ooh.
Through just obscure references and TV programs that my grandfather would watch.
Kit Carson.
Does that mean there's good Pony Express movies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I want to look those up. I like Westerns.
But it wasn't just Pony Express. And you also had the Pikes Peak Express, which was part of the Pony Express. And you had the Butterfield Stage Route, which was, you know, another thing. Pony Express was just famous because it was much, much faster. And, of course, they were put out of business very quickly because the telegraph was much, much, much faster than they were.
Yeah, they claimed they could make a letter delivery within 10 days from end to end.
Mm-hmm. And most of the time it was shorter, wasn't it? Didn't it average more like 7 to 8?
I think it was 8 or 9.
Depended on the traffic of the American Indians. The traffic jams they caused.
Yes.
You know. So tell us about it on hashtag Stamp Stories, hashtag Pony Express.
And there was also an older story. Actually, the Mongols had the equivalent of a Pony Express.
Okay.
During the time of Genghis Khan.
Yeah, except they used like Shetland ponies.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't use the thoroughbred horses, but yeah, they had relay stations and everything set up exactly the same way, except that was for government. The Pony Express was set up as a commercial venture. They weren't looking at, you know, linking east and west or anything. They were looking at making money, and the cost of it, the ability of the riders to carry enough mail for it to be profitable, it really never worked because, if I remember correctly, when you modify for inflation and everything like that, a letter costs somewhere around $85 to get from Missouri to San Francisco. And that was a good amount of money. There wasn't a heck of a lot of stuff that had to be there that quick. Because if you mailed it normal, it would get there in a month. So you're really only getting 15 days early.
I thought we charged a lot for priority. Jeez.
Yeah. Okay, so updates. What corrections do you have for us today, Mr. Cash?
Well, I wanted to say I'm sorry to Mr. Stanley Piller. I told him I would in the last episode, and I am fulfilling my promise here today. Other than that, I really don't have anything to correct. However, I do want to remind everyone that May 10th is Mother's Day. And if you're listening to this podcast, you should be putting a letter, a Mother's Day card in the mail today so that it gets there on time.
May 10th?
Mm-hmm. I like May the 4th better.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Star Wars Day is coming up.
Is that going to be a podcast day? That'd be cool.
That would be interesting. Ooh, we'll have a May 4th
Star Wars themed podcast.
I need to
podcast.
Make cachets for that.
Sorry, Mom, not to belittle Mother's Day. Yeah. May the 4th is just more fun.
Oh, it comes before.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need to go to Disneyland that day.
Oh, they're going to do all kinds of neat stuff. That's right.
Well, in our heads. Well,
and the new preview is out. For the December, what is it? December 15th?
Christmas.
Oh, it's coming out on Christmas. The new Star Wars is coming out. And at the end, you see Han Solo and Chewbacca. And Han Solo looks old. Chewbacca, he's looking really good, though.
Those Wookiees age well.
They do. I didn't notice any difference whatsoever.
I suspect so would Groot.
Yeah.
Those two would probably get along pretty good.
Yeah.
And since Disney owns both Marvel and Star Wars, there's a crossover there.
Yeah, wait for the video game, Groot versus Chewbacca.
Sort of like an alien versus predator. They could growl at each other. One goes, I am Groot, and the other one goes, Arr!
That's funny.
Okay, so this week we had a listener question from Adam in Northern California. He said, I have a sheet of 100 U.S. number 1388F stamps that are misperforated so bad that the horizontal perf cuts through the middle of the design. Are these sort of things worth anything, and how bad does a perf error have to be valuable?
Well, obviously, if it goes through the middle of the design, that's pretty visually striking. And so, yes, there is some value there. Are you going to send your kids to school? Probably not. But
might buy them lunch.
Yeah, might buy them lunch.
Maybe a cheap trip to Vegas for the whole sheet?
Well, I have put some on eBay. And the ones, you know, when they go through the middle of the stamp, that's about as far off as you can get. I mean,
unless they're missing. Yeah,
yeah, unless it's totally missing. But I have seen them go anywhere from $5 each to $10 each on these regular issues.
So is the fact that it's an intact sheet, does that add to the value at all?
Probably
a small premium. Yeah.
A little bit.
But, I mean, you're talking 100 stamps. You probably won't get $5 a stamp for the whole sheet. You might get $250 for the whole sheet, $300 for the whole sheet. But if you were to break it up and sell in blocks of four, you might get $10 or $15 a block for it.
Yeah, more than that. But I agree that, you know, as a
sheet.
It
depends on how obvious it is.
As you have an advantage as a sheet in that you only have to find one buyer. you have a disadvantage that if you found 100 buyers, you would get more money. So I think Scott's absolutely right there. If you sold the sheet, you'd get $250. If you pieced them out, you'd get $500, but you have to find 100 people who want the stamp then.
Interesting. So then what kinds of misperfs are valuable then? Besides the imperfs, those ones are, you know, imperf betweens. That's kind of obvious.
Well, let's discuss them. Imperf betweens and imperf at the bottoms, in the margins, stuff like that.
Well, imperf between is just that. It's two stamps and basically one row. If you have a whole sheet, just one row of perforations is missing generally. And it just means that the two stamps aren't separated by perforations. Usually it's in the middle of the sheet. They come from somewhere in the middle of the sheet. Now, occasionally the sheet stamps were, when they were perforated, there was no perforation on one edge. And generally it was intended to be a straight edge, but sometimes it's not. It has selvage at the bottom, and they end up being just imperf at the bottom. And those can be desirable. They're not really – they're not too rare. Again, a small premium for those.
I think the older the stamp is, the more it's worth if it's misperfed.
Mm-hmm.
However – I went into this. I've seen poorly centered stamps that they consider misperf, and they're not misperf. They're just really badly centered.
I saw somebody trying to do that. They were trying to pull that with the cheap set of used Colombians, the penny values, and they maybe had 8 of them, and they were just incredibly off centered. But they were trying to say that it was a misperf. No.
Yeah, so I guess, well, technically, you know, they've got an argument.
Maybe.
I think that for it to be truly misperfed, I think you got to be, let's say, into the design 25%. And next week I can do a CAS correction and say it should be 27.5% or something like that.
Well, let me save you from a CAS correction this week because... 1388F doesn't exist in the catalog. I'm sure that was a typo. It's supposed to be 1338.
F. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's just how he sent it to us. Probably.
I'm just reading the question.
Exactly.
I know, but I'm just trying to save you
from a
correction.
I saw a picture of it. It was just a it was a regular flag stamp.
Yeah, it's a flag over capital
flag
stamp.
Over, yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's versus things like I remember one of our guys, Steve Rosen, showed me one time that he called a spectacular misperf for the sheet had gotten folded over at about a 30-degree angle in the middle.
Yeah.
So it's just this rows of perforations running diagonally across the stamp face. Is that better than just, say, the sheet having been shifted to the left and up a little bit so that it's still parallel with the design?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like that guy on eBay that you were talking about. It's... where there is a line somewhere where you go from poorly centered to misperfed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where that line is, but it's got to be significant.
Find a beholder. It's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, there you go there. So I would think, you know, if it goes into on the 1857 issue, you know, if it goes into the design 20%, then it's just poorly centered. But if you do that on a 1988 issue, then you probably have an argument for a misperf. So I think that there is, you know, way overlap. Those circles intersect in a really big area.
Really, really what we're talking about are what's termed a freak. They're not really errors because they don't quite rise to that level. If the perforations were completely missing, like an imperf between pair or a pair that's imperf horizontally or vertically, those are errors because the perforations are completely omitted. But these are – we're talking just about freaks where the perforations have been shifted, freakishly shifted.
There you go. There's the line.
Ah.
If it's a freak, then it's a misperf. If it's not a freak, then it's just a badly centered stamp.
And then, of course,
A shifted color could be a freak as well, as long as all the colors appear on the stamp. If a shifted color moves one of the colors off the stamp, now you have a color missing. based on the perf shift.
I think we talked about that in another episode at one point, too, that it becomes impossible to tell sometimes if somebody has a sheet and all it is that the color registered one stamp over. Mm-hmm. And you have the sheet, well, you can prove, well, no, you know, the ink was actually on the sheet. But as soon as somebody separates it and that stamp is now by itself, well, now it's just the color's missing and you have no way to tell what happened to it.
Well, but generally, if it's due to a perf shift, you have an off-centered stamp and you can say, well, this is likely due to a perf. You have to assume that it's due to the perf shift because that's more likely to have happened rather than the ink running dry and not getting printed.
Yeah, there's a couple stamps like that that it has like USA 20. I forget which stamp it is, but the USA and the denomination are at the bottom.
There's a lot of them.
And the perfs shift up so that the USA and denomination are on the top of the stamp below it.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And the one that should have it at the bottom, you know, it would have
if it came from the top row.
If it came from the top row, now you've got selvage there instead of the value, so it's shifted off. Now, there's a relatively famous, and I collect Philippines, a relatively famous stamp where they put the words Philippines in gold at the bottom of the stamp, and it got shifted, so it was on the top of the stamp below it. So that means all the top row stamps have Philippines omitted. But really, it's not omitted. You would, if there would have been a stamp above it, it would have appeared on the top. So the top row stamps, because of these anomalies, don't get part of the design printed on it. And they listed in Scott's catalog as omitted.
Well, and that's really semantics, omitted versus missing.
Right.
Omitted means that process never occurred. Missing means the process occurred, but it didn't end up on the right stamp or on your stamp.
Good point.
So it's a very semantics. It's very much semantics when you talk about that. And when you read the catalog, having a color missing or omitted on a stamp, the stamp looks the same. It's just how it got there.
We're all about the semantics.
thank you, beholders, for your feedback.
Three out of four stamp experts make up 75% of the stamp expert population.
Good statistic to know.
There you go.
Okay, so our expert topic of the week is the Pony Express. This last week featured the 155th anniversary of the Pony Express, which was featured on a Google Doodle, which, if you clicked on it, turned into a mini game, which Scott came jumping out of office up and down to show us.
I thought it was kind of cute.
Yeah, it was.
I got away about halfway through it until I hit a cactus.
It was a game where you had to deliver the mail.
Yep. And run up and, well, you had to pick up the mail, too. You went up and down, picked up the mail,
and then you
avoided the cactuses. And if you hit a rock, you stop. But if you hit a cactus, then you fell off your horse.
Ouch.
It's funny because you'll always win because it'll always reset you to a point where it keeps going. So you can not play the game and still win it. So the mail always gets delivered.
Ah, well, there you go.
And you have to pick up 100 envelopes to truly win the game.
Ooh.
So if you want to see that, you can go to Google and search Google Doodles, and they house them there for infinity.
Oh, yeah.
I think they
keep them all.
I don't think they have a limit on their data plan.
I think they have like a warehouse somewhere where they store them all.
Yeah.
Yep. Boxed and categorized.
That's it.
So what was the Pony Express? And Jeff's going to take us through a little more of the history taken out of Wikipedia.
So just a brief little paragraph about Wikipedia that's short and concise. The Pony Express was a mail service delivering messages, newspapers, mail, and small packages from St. Joseph, Missouri, across the Great Plains, over the Rocky Mountains, and the Sierra Nevada to Sacramento, California, by horseback, using a series of relay stations. Officially operating as the Leavenworth and Pikes Peak Express Company of 1859, which in 1860 became the Central Overland California and Pikes Peak Express Company, this firm was founded by William H. Russell, Alexander Majors, and William B. Waddell, all of whom were notable in the freighting business. During its 18 months of operation, it reduced the time for messages to travel between the Atlantic and Pacific coasts to about 10 days. From April 3, 1860 to October 1861, it became the West's most direct means of east-west communication before the telegraph was established and was vital for tying the new state of California with the rest of the United States.
So for those of you out there, it was not a government agency, but it did operate like one because it grossed $90,000 and lost $200,000.
Quasi-government.
Yeah. Yeah. They were governmental before they knew it.
Yep.
Which, by the way, a lot of people, and I collect these too, if you look in the 1880s, you'll find a whole lot of Pony Express covers too, because P-O-N-Y was Post Office New York. And so you, a lot of people will put on eBay that they're Pony Express covers because they have Pony on it.
Oh, boy. Ba-dum-tsh.
Well, I mean, you know, well, people don't know. And they go, wow, this is Pony Express. It's like, no, you're 40 years too late.
Then I don't know.
Hey, that was like the guy that asked you that he had a stamp from like the 1400s or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Finland stamp.
Yep.
Yeah, with the U.S. flag on it.
With the U.S. flag.
Well, you know, people know what they know, and the facts are beside the point.
Well,
pretty much.
The Pony Express is iconic. Most people know about it. So you see this envelope and you turn it over and it has Pony on the back and you go, wow, this is probably Pony Express. It's like, no, that's Post Office New York.
Oops.
So, Jeff, do you want to take the Pony Express writer oath?
The oath, that's right. There is an oath that they made these writers take, I guess I'll say it. I, so-and-so, do hereby swear before the great and living God that during my engagement and while I am an employee of Russell, Majors, and Waddell, I will under no circumstances use profane language, that I will drink no intoxicating liquors, that I will not quarrel or fight with any other employee of the firm, and that in every respect I will conduct myself honestly, be faithful to my duties, and so direct all my facts as to win the confidence of my employers, so help me God.
All your facts?
Acts.
Did
I say all my facts?
No, yeah. You said, did he say facts?
Yeah, he did.
Nice.
I'm not doing that again.
Nice to know you, so-and-so.
Oops.
So how valuable are Pony Express stamps that are authentic and used properly?
Well, the stamps themselves aren't necessarily that expensive.
But, well, there are
the
different
covers that
really, eras
yes,
that make a huge difference. The first, I believe it is the first 6 months or so, they have a running horse that actually says Pony Express on it. Those tend to be $10,000 to $20,000 each. Now, the Central Overland and Pikes Peak later ones that are, and they're really kind of, they're not really the relay station shooting across the countryside Pony Express that everybody thinks of, but they are, and it's a Pikes Peak thing. Those tend to run maybe $500 to $2,000 for a really nice one. And then when you get the later ones that are actually Wells Fargo covers, and they'll have a Pony Express stamps, but it's really Pony Express in name only. You'll have a Wells Fargo cover with a Pony Express stamp on it. Those are a couple $1,000, depending on where it is. A stamp, an unused stamp, you can pick one up for a nice one for $50 and a ratty one for $15.
Oh, that's not bad. I would have thought it would have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they printed more than they thought they'd be in production, you know, more than a year and a half.
if they lost $110,000 in 18 months of service back then, yeah, they probably had some clerical errors going on.
Yeah. So, yeah, it really depends on what era of the Pony Express or what part of the Pony Express you're dealing with, because they range in value greatly.
So are any Pony Express items particularly faked?
All the time.
They will find the mint stamps and apply fake cancels to them. That's the most common faking that you will see.
Because the genuine use is so much more expensive.
Right. A genuine stamp may have a catalog value of a mint stamp may have a catalog value of $50, and you could buy it for $20 to $25. Whereas a used stamp will have a catalog value of $125 to $200.
Hmm.
So there's a big payoff for putting a fake cancel on it. The lucky thing is nobody really makes good fake cancels. They're pretty easy to determine. Most people who do a little research can do it. If you don't want to do the research, send it to any of the expertizing agencies, plug for PSE, and you know, we'll be able to get you an opinion on whether it's real or not pretty easily. And the cert isn't that expensive.
Okay, so if you were going to go looking for Pony Express stamps, where would you start? Because that's kind of, that's not something I see all the time at every dealer's table.
Well, here's the hitch. Pony Express stuff is collected by stamp collectors and history collectors and document collectors and book collectors and Western history collectors and cowboy memorabilia collectors. There are a zillion people who collect Wells Fargo and Pony Express memorabilia. So there is a huge amount of competition for the items. And when I sell them on eBay, I'll bet you half the time they sell to stamp collectors and the other half the time they don't.
So that's one of those items you really want to try to put in multiple categories if you're selling them on eBay then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or look at multiple categories. So, you know, they may have a Pony Express cover, but it, not know the dating of it. You know, the first 6 months, like I said, these things are incredibly expensive. And Scott Treppel wrote a pamphlet book magazine sort of thing, an excellent write-up. And I think for the first 6 or 7 trips back and forth, so 14 total runs back and forth, there's only about 20 items. And some of those runs have no items that exist from the run that are known of. So they're numbered. You know, they go, oh, this is one from the third run, and it's got a sister, and that's all there is. And that's where, you know, you're getting into the $20,000 range.
Well, when you talk about there are none known, there are none known to stamp collecting.
Oh, good
point.
That
could be the case.
You never know whose hoard they're in.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who are writing a lot of books about the Pony Express, not just stamp collectors, which we also wanted to give a plug.
But you still have
plug.
To... Yeah, Richard Fragola also wrote a book on Pony Express covers. But you have to do the research to find out if any of these other books contain images of covers or reports of covers to really know what exists.
Yeah, it's the earliest...
It may be some cowboy collector that's writing a book.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got pictures of 3 or 4 covers in there that have never been known to stamp collectors before.
Well, typically, from normal mail, it's estimated from this time period that 1% to 2% of the stuff still exists today.
Hmm.
However, because of the expense, you can kind of assume that the Pony Express letters had stuff in it that was of import to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't just Aunt Mabel was, you know, sick and she might die or something. It was, you know, Aunt Mabel died. So you have important stuff going through the Pony Express. Otherwise, people wouldn't pay the money.
Yeah, if it was anything besides just a slip of paper, if I remember, the rate that the government approved was $5 per ounce of material.
No, half.
For half? Really? Wow.
Yeah, it was basically a small piece of paper in an envelope. That was it.
So could you imagine having to send a small package or a small bundle of papers? That would just get astronomically expensive. Well,
you didn't send that by Pony Express. Yeah. You sent that on the Overland stage.
But to correct, it was, I believe, $4 for half an ounce.
Yes, $2 and $4.
$2 and $4. So $2 for half an ounce, $4 for an ounce?
I believe so.
Yeah, okay.
Range from 10 cents to $4 at the rate of $5 per ounce.
Yeah, but there were also surcharges and extra fees that they charged. And they had to put a U.S. postage stamp on it. This is an interesting rule that people should be aware of because it's kind of fun. If you sent a letter over the postal roads, even if the postal roads were not roads, you know, the trail, that trail that the Pony Express guy ran over was a postal road. If you ran over the postal roads, you had to give the post office their 3 cents.
Huh.
So on the early, and I know that the early ones were not $2 and $4. I think the early stamps were $2 and $4, but I believe the first Pony Express envelopes were $10 and $16. I think it was $10 for half an ounce and $16 for an ounce. And I'm sure somebody will email us and correct it, but I'm pretty certain that's the amount. So you'll have the envelope. It'll have the Pony Express cancel on it, and it'll have a 3 cent stamp. And then it'll have a manuscript somewhere on it written paid or paid 16 or something like that. So you won't have $16 in stamps. The only stamp you'll have on it is a 3 cent stamp or a 3 cent indicia if it was an envelope.
So that's why, that makes why some of the used covers I've seen, that makes more sense now that there's a U.S. stamp. So when did they transition over to the actual little Pony Express stamps? How did that work?
That was way later, way later. That was when Wells Fargo basically took it over. The government, I'm not sure whether I'm using the word correctly. I believe they forced the companies to merge, if I'm not mistaken. They knew the route was there. They wanted to keep the route there, and they basically said, you, get together, make a deal. So it ended up going through a couple hands, but it ended up settling down on Wells Fargo. And so when Wells Fargo took it over, they're the ones who issued the Wells Fargo stamps, and they had the $2 and $4 rate. But the original first run Pony Expresses that were actually on the 16-year-old kid with the horse dodging the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be an envelope with a 3 cent stamp on it.
10 cent stamp.
No, I think it was a 3 cent.
Ten. It was a 10. Yeah, there's a picture of one in here. Yep.
Well, no, that's a Pike's Peak.
Oh, that's Pike's. Okay.
It could have been a 10 center. But I kind of think it was a 3 center because it was less than 3,000 miles. So it was either a 3 cent or a 10 cent. I'm saying 3 cent. Scott says 10 cent. Next week, there will either be a cash correction or that's it. And then over on the right side, they'll have this really cool postmark of a horse running, and it'll say Pony Express on it. And they're very striking covers. They're really neat, but it's just a stamp. And then the Pony Express cancel. All the ones that I saw, I don't believe the cancel hit the stamp.
Oh.
I think the stamps were mostly just pen canceled.
That's too bad.
But that's how you tell if you got one of the lottery winners. It's just an envelope that's got the cancel. Later on, when you have the Wells Fargo, you'll have a 3 cent stamp up on the lower, 10 cent or whatever. It depends. Then you'll have a bar across the top that says Wells Fargo. And then on the left side, you'll have the Wells Fargo stamp, which will be somewhere between a 50 cent and a $4 stamp. And those will be the later Stagecoach, let's call them Pony Express stamps.
Mm-hmm.
You bring up the most valuable covers. The most famous Pony Express mail was in 1860. An unknown Pony Express rider was crossing the trackless wastes of Nevada when he vanished, likely killed by Indians. 2 years later, in May 1862, the mail pouch, still containing letters bound for East, was recovered. Today, only a few remnants of the contents of the saddlebag survive. Among the envelope is a long-term loan at the Smithsonian's National Postal Museum. The envelope's owner, William H. Gross, donated the funds and built the wing at that museum, actually.
Bill Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
Bill yeah big Gross. Surprise. Bill Gross owns the best one.
Hey.
And he actually donated it for an exhibit there. And it's one of the only two pieces of what collectors call interrupted mail from the Pony Express known to exist that were in the writer's pouch.
That's again, pretty cool.
If somebody wants some specifics on it, like I said, Scott Trepel wrote a fantastic manuscript on this stuff. And he talked about each one of the runs that went across. And he spoke about that one. And several years after it was lost, it turned up and it was delivered. So technically, no Pony Express mail was lost, although it was severely delayed.
Yeah, there was another gentleman, one of the youngest writers, was killed and, like, got cornered, so he shot himself, I guess, or something.
Who?
Ew.
Who?
That's a good one.
The youngest one. Let me see. And anyway, they
Billy
didn't...
Billy Tate.
Yeah, they didn't scalp him, which was a sign that they respected the gentleman that they killed.
It was a respective one. Yeah, it's cool. There were a couple of famous writers. Of course, Buffalo Bill was one of the most famous. Then Robert Haslam, Jack Keatley, and Jessica's talking about Billy Tate was a 14-year-old kid, got himself surrounded, killed seven of them before he went down, and they respected his fighting skills and valor so much that they did not disturb his body. They left him intact.
Buffalo Bill was a Pony Express writer?
William Cody?
Yeah, that's Buffalo Bill. Yeah.
Yep, he was their most famous one. That's why it appeals so much to cowboy collectors. It's got some big names attached to it.
Well, Buffalo Bill also, you know, he put on the circus show. So I can totally see now how he promoted the Pony Express as being this really great thing because he was there.
Exactly. So if I have a letter that I was going to send by Pony Express and I give it to the first Pony Express clerk, how does it get to California? How does that journey work? Why was it so much faster?
Oh, well, there were three routes to get to California, and this was the central one. This was the one along which they kind of made the railroad, and it was just really straight. They had a 3-cent rate for 3,000 miles, and to California, it was a little less than 2,800, I believe it was. You'd walk up to the express clerk in St. Louis, Missouri, and say, "Here, quickly, get this to Sacramento." And then he'd say, "Thank you, give me money." And the outposts, I forget how far the outposts were.
10 miles apart.
That close?
10 miles apart. They said that's how far a horse could go galloping without
breaking
tired.
The horse.
Yeah. I thought it was much further than that. But, okay, so then 10 miles, you had like over 250 of these things going across.
That's crazy.
No wonder
they lost so much money.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a lot of overhead.
Yeah.
You said there's 157 Pony Express stations along the route.
Yeah. Well, that's like Butterfield. I mean, no mail service from east to west made money. They were all losing ventures, and that's why the government had to step in on all of them until the trains came. When the trains came, then all of a sudden you could do whatever you want. But before the trains were there, Butterfield lost money. Wells Fargo lost money. They all lost money.
Wow.
They all tried to make money. They all thought, wow, this is a great thing. And then, of course, the telegraphs came in, and then everybody lost money.
Well, no, he kind of won money in the end by selling all his... I guess, stock or horses and stations stuff to his competitor.
Right.
And
forced merger thing.
Yeah. He made $1.5 million in 1866 after the Civil War. So that's kind of a win. So the other guy took the loss later down the road, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's not too bad then. So I know it was a big deal enough where there were a handful of U.S. stamps issued to commemorate the Pony Express. There was a Pony Express Rider 2-cent stamp in the issue of 1869.
I have one of those.
Yes, we have several of them. There, you can get a decent one used for $15 or $20. Then there was a 3-cent commemorative Pony Express 80th anniversary. And then later in 1960, they did a 100th anniversary with a 4-cent commemorative. So it still lives on even in modern stamps.
Do they have a Pony Express on the Western sheet? Legends of the West?
I don't remember.
Yeah. I'm sure they must.
I think there is. Or it was one of the ones that was... they did artwork for, but didn't end up releasing.
Yeah, just remember that Pony Express is different from just normal express companies. There were lots of express companies. Express just meant that it was like Federal Express. There were lots of companies like Federal Express running around. And Pony Express just kind of happened to be one of them.
Was it the best one or the longest running? Or
well, definitely was not the longest running.
It sounds like it might have been certainly one of the fastest.
It was one of the ones that had the best story.
That's true. That's for sure. Because that's the one we remember.
Yeah.
Nobody knows the other ones. Yeah. I mean, like I said, in grade school, we remember Pony Express and Wells Fargo, and that's it.
Yeah, Bamberg and Alta and, you know, all these things that nobody cares about. Although they did make pretty cool envelopes.
Huh, I wonder why they're lost in history.
Because they didn't have Buffalo Bill.
Oh, there we go.
Yep.
And that's a load of bull.
Aww.
Okay, you ready to open our, hopefully, lottery ticket?
I opened one earlier and I didn't win.
Aww.
Well, that's cheating.
No, I had a friend. He'd never seen one before, so I opened one for him.
No, I don't have a pair of scissors here, so I got to stab this one with stamp tongs to open it up.
Drum roll!
Drum roll! Man, I sure hope we get one of these so we can record that.
That would be really neat.
Yelling and screaming. No.
I think the upside down plane crash.
$12 in postage.
Okay, well, you can email us at stampshowtoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook stampshowtoday, and our website www.stampshowtoday.com with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on a Google Voice answering machine anytime. Country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call directly from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, this is Mike Moticia, and I'm with the Reese Chapter of the American First Aid Cover Society, and I'm listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.